Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's got Star Trek, episode 71. Enterprise, season 1, episode 7. The Andorian Incident.
May I? I confess, I feel awkward myself on this ship, sometimes. Out of place. But what is that Vulcan motto? Infinite diversity.
In infinite combinations.
And what is diversity? But a celebration of differences. I wonder if you might remind me of our mission on this vessel. Please, indulge me.
Our mission is to make contact with those who humans consider new life and new civilizations.
In other words, to seek infinite diversity.
I suppose so.
Well, then it seems to me a cultural exchange between your Vulcan brethren and your human crew is simply a furtherance of that mission.
All right, so what do we, what's going on here? What are we doing?
The Andorian Incident.
The Andorian Incident! We're doing a podcast about the Andorian Incident.
That's from Enterprise.
Enterprise.
Yes. So welcome.
Enter and get a prize.
Welcome. Ooh. We're diving right in to this thing we call the It's Got Star Trek podcast. We are covering...
Episode 71.
Yes, episode 71. Thank you, Jesse. We are covering the Andorian Incident, which is from Star Trek Enterprise, season 1.
That was back when it was just called Enterprise.
Episode... Any guesses, folks? Which number
is it episode? Six?
I know what it is.
What do you, well, it's the first controversy around.
Yeah, there was a controversy because.
Okay. What number do you think it is?
This is a trick question.
It's not a trick question.
Fuck you. Is this a trick question?
No, fuck me.
We were saying it was episode.
Fuck the producers.
Seven.
Seven.
But if you look on certain streaming. Well, streaming platforms will have it as episode six.
Yeah. So, and if you look up, and if you look online, the first answers are usually six.
I eventually, because I always deal with this nonsense because I'm anal retentive and OCD, and I like to have the title be, you know, the title of the episode. The title of the podcast is the title of the episode, and then there's like the consistent code for the, you know, season X, episode X. And it's always frustrating when there's this controversy and it's related to how the pilot is broken up because some of them break it up into two episodes. Mm. Some of them have it as one episode. I normally default to the one episode, but when you look at Memory Alpha, when you look at, what is it? IMDb, they have it as episode seven. And there are a couple other ones that are sort of the more prominent ones that they have it as episode seven. So
I watched it on Netflix and I was looking, I went to episode seven and that wasn't the episode.
Yeah, that's
for some reason. I wasn't reading any of the ones around it like right away. So I was like, where is it? I was like, did I get the season right? And then I was like, oh, wait, episode six.
Yeah.
It's like, what the hell is going
episode
on?
Episode six on Netflix.
That was the only time actually that we've usually called out like the number of the episode. And whenever I'm looking at it never there's never a conflict. This is the first time I've had a conflict.
It comes up every now and then.
What's a pilot? What's a pilot?
Pilot.
I can't
pilot
do it.
Light.
We're trying to do the John Travolta
in
Pulp Fiction.
I watched you watch him. Or watched you wash him. Watched you wash him.
Who?
Yeah. I can't say, I can't do the
how?
John
Travolta. When? Whoa.
It's really hard to do the John Travolta.
You're going
to
go home, jerk off. That's all you're going to do.
Yeah. Pilot. She was in a pilot. That's how you do it. That's it, right? Pilot. She was in a pilot. Now I can't do it anymore. Now it's...
Well...
It went from like north to south.
So the long and the short of it is we're discussing the Andorian incident, and we are agnostic as to whether you consider it episode number six or episode number seven. For the purposes of the podcast, we will...
Don't speak for me. Hereafter. Don't fucking speak for me. I am not agnostic to that shit.
Okay.
It's six.
I thought you said it was seven.
No, I said it was six, motherfucker.
Okay.
I said, you look everywhere, it says six.
You look everywhere.
Well, you look in the first couple Googles, which is everywhere.
And you look. Oh, you got your Googles.
So you get, and your Netflix. You got the two. Google,
you got your Googles, you got your Netflix.
You got the two that matter,
so
Google
maybe
and Netflix.
Wrong.
There you
and
go.
And you got the only Google that matters, which is like the first two entries. Maybe at the bottom of the page, but never past the first page.
Star Trek, you bring so much pleasure, you bring so much pain. So much strife, you're dividing us.
Maybe we need
We've been friends for years.
Maybe we need to go practice colinar.
Colinar.
Vulcans, you achieve colinar. I don't think you practice it.
I thought
you
colinar. I thought colinar.
Pink flesh.
So you can get one of those virtual colinars.
So wait.
They give you a box.
You know what happens?
You win the prize, Jesse.
You know what happens when you get too emotional and everything falls apart and you can't like keep your shit together anymore because you're crazy. You know what you need then? You need a colonoscopy. When you get up your butt. When your emotions get up your butt. What all you need, when you you know what you get when you get wait, let me try this again. Let me try this again.
Rewind.
You know what you get when your head's up your own ass.
What?
You know what you need when your head's up your own ass with your own angry, crazy emotions? You need a colonoscopy. Is that funnier?
Yeah, okay. I personally have never agreed with the old adage that says one should never see how the sausage is made. In this case, the comedy sausage. I like watching you go through this live process. Yeah. Workshopping a colonar/colonoscopy joke. I think it's a good angle. Might still, you might need to a few more run-throughs.
I'm opening a part of myself up to you. Yours was what was yours?
Mine was better.
What was yours?
I just said virtual colonar.
Yeah, that probably is better.
Yeah. We'll put it to a vote. The listeners out there.
But I don't really get it. Virtual colonar?
Yeah, because there's like...
You'd made a guitar symbol.
Because it's like virtual... There's like virtual colonoscopies where they just scan you.
You poop in a box and you send it to them.
Yeah,
and they call that a
virtual colonar.
It's a virtual colonoscopy.
A virtual colonoscopy. Well, you should say colonoscopy. So Patrick, okay, fine. Patrick, earlier you were saying colonar is a destination like enlightenment, but what I was saying is I thought colonar was a process like meditation.
In the motion picture at the beginning we see Spock is trying to obtain achieve colonar.
Okay,
He's gone through the process of training and he goes to his final exams, but then he hears V'ger for some reason and looks at the sky and the old Vulcan lady priest, I forget if it's T'Pau, I can't remember. Regardless, she says, you're not ready, yo.
Yeah, she kicks him out.
You got to go check out, you're looking at the stars and shit.
Vulcans spend a lot of time making sure those emotions stay out to try to get rid of them. It's like it builds up and they have to like barf it all out. Mm-hmm. When they were at the temple, he was talking about, even though it was
You're making a comment. I thought this was leading into a joke.
You don't know, do you?
And when you get too stuck up with emotions, you need to get a colonoscopy.
Yeah. I would pull that again. But, okay, when they went there, and obviously it was the Andorians that broke all the shit, but that guy was saying, it's because of colonar, they get too emotional, so they throw shit and break shit. And I'm wondering, first of all, is that true, do you think, in the lore?
I bet it is.
It probably is. But then you got to worry about their own safety, because what's preventing them from just all out fucking each other up,
I think Vulcans do fuck each other and themselves up a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. If you collect it all together, one great thing about Enterprise is
fighting.
We get to learn so much more Vulcan lore, which is then continued later and used later on.
And Sarek does a lot of damage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man.
When that one, this was kind of near the end, but it doesn't really matter where it was. When that one creepy Andorian who was like, my prisoner. It's like, why? That was not necessary. They didn't need a rapey Andorian.
The sexual violence was... completely unrelated to the plot. It didn't resolve in any way.
But then there was also this weird sort of undertone. Is it an undertone or an overtone? I don't know. But when Archer was doing the whole masculine thing with T'Pol, he's like, leave her alone. And, here, have this blanket.
2001.
So.
The bushier.
Yeah. And then T'Pol like lost her cool when he said that when he didn't trust her. And she was like, I've never broken orders. And then she like pulled the blanket away all emotionally like a woman would. even an emotionless Vulcan woman would do that. But
I was thinking about it because first of all, it was completely ridiculous, this whole thing. Now, okay, one step back, I really enjoy this episode, but I think it is important to point out that there are a few things that mar it, but that's one of the key things, which is, okay, random rapey sexual violence man to Paul, used as a sexual prop for, and not even for, it's not like Archer saved her from being raped or something, which would have also been bad, but it was even less meaningful than that. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, what if instead it was the guy was like trying to like commit some sexual violence on Trip? And I thought, well, that would be more interesting, but it would still be, in the context of this episode, completely pointless.
Yeah, that really didn't go anywhere, and it didn't achieve anything. It did lead to one bit of lore that I also questioned, where it was saying, like, that Andorian guy was saying to T'Pol, he was like, I hear that you make your men fight to the death in order to mate or whatever.
Right.
Yeah. Like, is that that's not a Vulcan
thing. I never heard of that shit.
Is that just him being...
No, that's what happens in Amok Time in TOS, where Kirk has to fight Spock.
Yeah,
that's what he's talking about.
Yeah, but I mean, that's not like on par with Vulcan behavior.
Don't they
do things to try to prevent shit like that? Like, maybe they want to do that all the time, but they know that that's no good, so they try to prevent it.
With the evidence presented on screen, I would kind of be like, yes and no. I get the impression that yes, it was not a particularly common thing. I think her in TOS, we've now shifted to talking about Amok Time. But in Amok Time, my impression was she did not want to marry Spock. So she presented this challenge in an effort to just get Spock to go away or whatever. But because Spock was all, you know, going nuts with his sexy drives, you know, his Ponfar.
See, that's the thing, is they have to be amped up in order to get in that way.
And Spock was away. And of course, that was TOS, so the lore hadn't quite settled yet. They go more into that in Enterprise, although some of the stuff that comes along, I think maybe they didn't handle exactly the right way. There are definitely some awkward episodes involving T'Pol, but there are also some very cool ones. But this one is really cool in that Enterprise started out being all like, Vulcans are kind of shitty. They're, you know, they're not giving us warp five technology.
Warp five. They wouldn't give them warp five.
But this is the episode where we are like, oh, they're just straight up lying and manipulating. Mm-hmm. And it is a cool twist to have the Andorians all set up as an antagonist.
Right.
With Jeffrey Combs being all kick-ass, Jeffrey Combs style. And then in the end, it's like, he was totally fucking right. The Vulcans were not just like being like manipulative. They were straight up lying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, they didn't bother telling anybody about the Andorians in the first place. Like, you'd think that the Vulcans would give the humans some kind of briefing on like some of the other major players in the nearby star systems.
Because that was the first time the humans met the Andorians.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Like, and the Andorians didn't know anything about the humans either. Right.
And
pink face.
Shran came up with that pink skin. like that. Like it's like he'd been calling them that for years, even though he'd never seen them before.
Yeah.
Vulcans aren't pink skins.
And it ends
apparently.
Up that the Andorians are like one of the founding species of the Federation, but this is before the Federation.
The pink skin thing is interesting because on the one hand it's a funny joke and it's a funny play on sort of prejudice and racism. On the other hand, it's also an example of the white privilege perspective in Hollywood, certainly at that time, because pink skin as an insult to humans is sort of being like, all humans are white people.
Yeah.
Pink skins.
That's a good point.
Now, you could argue in this case, Shran only saw Archer and Trip, and, you know, those are the people he saw. They're both pretty fucking white.
Yeah.
All the darker people they left on the ship.
Yeah.
So,
and that situation never came up.
And that British guy is pretty dark.
But that is that's a weak sauce explanation for it. Like, it is a funny joke, but I was listening to it and I was like, you know what? that's just assuming all humans are white people. Other people are subhuman.
This Tucker is always...
Charles Trip Tucker III.
Or not Tucker, I'm sorry. Malcolm Reed every once in a while gets... You get these like every once in a while in an episode, like the one where he was fixing the captain's chair. Wasn't that the same one he was like trying to come up with the name for the alert? Like the danger alert?
The red alert, yeah.
Yeah, and then so it's like Reed is like establishing these protocols every once in a while in episodes, like the red alert thing. That was very much alluding to that because they kept beating around the bush in it. This one, there was when... What's her name? It's the translator.
Hoshi Saito.
I was afraid to say it because it's like, is it
Hoshi Saito?
I was like, is it Hoshi or Toshi? And it was like, it's Hoshi. And I don't know why I was scared to say it. I was afraid to get the name wrong. So I pretended I didn't remember at all. But she was all talking about like...
A colonoscopy.
Maybe you need a colonoscopy.
So this one, she was talking about like, oh, are they supposed to scan for aliens every time they go to a planet? Mm-hmm. And Reed's like, yes, they should. And then she's like...
Which seems pretty fucking obvious if you have the technology.
I mean, right? It doesn't seem like a big deal to like...
Nah, just don't bother.
Yeah, and then she's like, what, are they supposed to check in every 10 minutes or some stuff?
But you're on a sailing ship. It's like, should we look at the shore? It's like, nah, fuck it. Look the other way. When we're rowing in, we're, you know, don't worry about it.
We'll just
don't
see if we hit it or not.
And so she was saying, should we check in every 10 minutes? He's like, yes, we should do that too. So I bet those are like, I just got a feeling like that was another example of him sort of establishing protocol, because they did, because that was all new back then. They didn't really have any protocol.
And this is early. Reed is somebody who, throughout the course of the series, we do get to learn a lot more about him, and he's a wonderful character. He's one of the characters, along with Mayweather, and to a certain degree, Hoshi, where people complain that it's unfortunate that they didn't get as much time. And I agree with that. It would have been fun to spend more time with these particular characters. But early on, it took a little while for us to get to know a lot about Reed from anything beyond these little clues like that, where it's like, all right, he's like super into like double checking and setting up protocols. That's like a character trait. We sort of learn about him over the course of the first few episodes.
They even have like an episode where it's his birthday and nobody knows anything about him. So.
Well, they all want to make him, they have to find out what his favorite like cake is or whatever.
Oh, right. Yeah.
The whole thing.
Yeah.
That's a good episode.
Yeah. Reed was getting mad in this episode because he couldn't strategize some people up.
Well, what's
you know?
His favorite cake?
Wasn't it pineapple? I think it was pineapple.
Pineapple.
I don't think it was a whole thing about like getting pineapple rations
from
like the chef or something.
Pineapple, but not my cake.
I don't know. Maybe it wasn't pineapple. It could be a pineapple
upside
down. I
just started liking pineapple on pizza. I don't like it on cake.
Dude.
Here's another division. We're splintering. We were once unified, now we're splintering. Seven, pineapple, pizza?
I would never choose to order a pineapple and ham pizza, but if it was there, somebody ordered it, I would eat it and be like, this is an interesting diversion from my normal pizza fare.
What about pineapple and bacon?
I mean, same shit, basically.
What about pineapple and anchovies?
Oof.
No.
Pineapple anchovies and a big old pile of shit.
I would eat
dipping.
Anchovies anchovies go well with like vegetables if you're gonna have like anchovies and
like
mushrooms
and
onions.
Like a Caesar salad. You know, Worcestershire sauce is made with anchovies. It's white people fish sauce.
Weird.
It was the version they made. Somebody had fish sauce.
Yep.
You know,
I was thinking about the pronunciation of Worcestershire sauce because it's like
Worcestershire.
Worcestershire.
So if you want to look at it, a lot of people are like Worcester, but if you break
Worcestershire.
It, but if you parse it differently, it's Worcestershire
sauce.
Worcestershire
is really pronounced sure.
Sure.
That's Worcestershire. And you can either pronounce the W-O-R-C-E as Worcha or Worse. And so you say Worcester, that's where you get that. Yeah. Or you can say Worcestershire.
Worcestershire.
He worked at the Dorchester? No, in Dorchester.
In Dorchester.
People in England.
Oh, yeah, that's a stupid.
It's a faulty tower, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Watery fowls?
Yeah. Oh, I know.
Anyways.
I know.
So back to the Andorian incident, a classic episode of Enterprise, which we've been discussing for a few minutes now.
I've never heard of Vulcans thinking that humans are so smelly as much as I have in this episode.
Yeah, I didn't know that Vulcans couldn't stand.
They
like,
introduced
being
that
around.
Early in a previous episode. Yeah. There's like a reference to it, but like, it's more here.
Yeah, I was like, damn.
They talk about it. They talk about it three times because like first it was that elder was talking to T'Pol and he was like the smell
of them.
Yeah, must be intolerable.
How do you deal being on that spaceship?
What do Vulcans smell like?
That's what I was wondering. Like, what do they smell like to us?
They just
like
don't
nothing?
Smell like anything.
But they smell like mushrooms.
Because Vulcans have a weird like metabolism, and they don't have any like blood pressure.
They've
or
got
something.
Copper blood.
Like, I kept thinking they smelled musty for some reason.
I bet they do.
Yeah.
I bet they have kind of like an
maybe it's just
that
episode.
Iron like kind of oxidized.
Maybe yeah. Maybe they smell coppery.
The coppery
like the taste of
ore.
Yeah.
When you drink like watery ore.
Tastes like a penny.
Yeah. When you suck on a couple pennies.
When you drink a watery
tart from Goshen, Virginia.
Oh no.
And she took a numbing agent, a nasal numbing agent.
Right.
Now, isn't that seems to me like, come on, you're a Vulcan, you got to gut that shit out.
Right. Aren't you supposed to be all focused?
You know what that sounded like to me? It sounded like cocaine. Cocaine is a nasal numbing agent.
Cocaine is a hell of a drug.
It's a numbing agent, like lidocaine or novocaine. Cocaine has a topical numbing thing, and if you put it up your nose, it's going to numb your nose.
And it's so bad that if you're cold, you don't want to share a blanket with a human,
right?
Because it's so stinky. Yeah, the cold is preferable to the odor.
What I don't recall is whether or not it was the grossness of the human odor or if it was some function of the Vulcans having mega smell or something. I can't remember if they mentioned, because they don't have T'Pol like going around on a way mission.
They can just smell like right up your butt.
She's all like, she's all like sniffing around
right in your pants.
Smell up your butt.
It's like my nose is up your butt.
I guess the first mention was she was talking about when they were talking about when they just found the planet. Octopus. They were saying, like, she was saying, I'm not certain we'd be welcome. And then Tucker all chimes in. It's like, it's
Tucker the third.
It's because Vulcans think we smell bad, isn't it?
and it's like, true.
Whatever. Then the last time is, when she was getting under the blanket with Archer the third time. And that's when he like was being all gentlemanly and giving her the blanket, even though you could say that it was just because she was the only other person there. But there was still, you could make the argument that it was just because she was the only other person there. There's nothing like sort of like.
Where was Trip at this time?
Trip was working on.
Was he still working on the radio?
The sensor.
Radio thing with
the
radio. With the
transmitter.
The Krellite battery or whatever.
The Krenulite battery? Krenulite power cell?
It was the Kremulin.
Trip Tucker the third.
The Cromulent.
It was the Krellite. It was the Krellite.
Krellite.
He got offered it first, and he was like, he was saying something like, they would just get my way right now, or something like that. And then, so she hands it to Archer, Archer hands it to her, and then she's like, you need it more than I. So I guess you could say that she was also being gallant as well. I guess they were both being
kind of
gallant.
Was this with the blanket?
Yeah, this is with the blanket. I was trying to make the argument that Archer was being, there was undertones of him being sort of like this white knight kind of like.
There's a little of that.
I don't want to say, you know what? I hate that using that term white knight. I'm trying to think of the right, were chivalrous, overly masculine, macho or whatever by offering her the blanket. But she, I guess.
There's nothing wrong with offering the blanket. It's a borderline because I think part of it is, you get hints from other areas of the plot, like the random rapist guy.
Right. That's what I mean. Right.
It primes you to start thinking that way.
That's what I mean is you can't, like, by what you see, you can argue that it has nothing to do with that, but it kind of fits in with everything else. But anyways, she wouldn't get in because she had been 24 hours since she took her nasal numbing agent, so she would rather freeze to death than smell him.
Nose candy. Paul's nose candy. She keeps it in one of those little Vulcan urns. Those cute little Vulcan urns, and she's like, there's some magic powder in here that's very important to my culture. Because these fucking people, they just leverage their goddamn culture to hide things. I mean, it really blows my mind. I've seen this episode a bunch of times, but...
They got a bunch of mummies. They're hiding that shit behind all the mummies.
I was just thinking about that. I was like, they are not only lying about this spy installation, right? Which is like, okay, you could... logically, they'd say, logically, we have to have, national security. It's an issue of national security. Security, so it's okay to lie.
Sensor.
It's like, all right, we've heard that. But beyond that, it's like, not only are we lying, we're actively, like, we're putting it under an actual ancient temple with actual mummies and important people so that we can feel all butthurt when you fucking fuck it up. Right? Because they're going to be like, they fucked up all our fucking mummies. And it's like, well, don't put your shit down there.
Revered ancestors. Our culture is destroyed.
It's just, I don't know. To me, that's fucked up, right?
Yeah.
There's something feels extra fucked up about that.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. As opposed to any of the many moons and asteroids where you could seemingly put that shit and nobody's going to go there because there's nothing fucking there.
Yeah, we don't have technology here. What? Are you crazy? Oh, wait, we have this broken down transmitter.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, we have a whole installation.
That's hidden. Here's this cool door that opens.
That's the reliquary. Don't go to
the reliquary. The reliquary is my favorite place. When I heard the reliquary, I was like, reliquary? What's that? Reliquary? Oh! It's where they keep their relics. That's awesome. It's the reliquary.
It's where they keep like their extra relics.
The extra, super Vulcan relics.
Because the other shit was relics too.
Yeah.
Sorry, what?
No, I'm just. It's funny that like it was all a reliquary, but they were like, oh no, this is the reliquary.
These
like,
are the ones that if you look at
this
them,
is
then
the
our
real reliquary.
Our culture falls apart if you look at it.
Right, right.
But it's like relics are strong enough to be a thing that they can have their own reliquary. You know, you can take that and turn it into its own thing.
You can watch what the Andorians are having for breakfast.
It's like how do you define what's going? Yeah, that antenna shit was racist, man. When Tucker is like, I don't get antenna.
Don't get your antennas in a bunch.
Yeah. I was thinking when he's like, don't get your antennas in a twist. Like,
twist.
Yeah. I was thinking like, first of all, like, you know, that's kind of funny, but like, you know, it's also fucked up. But do you think I was wondering, it's like, how does that translate in the Universal Translator? It probably translates to the same thing because from language to language, some shit just doesn't, some idioms just don't translate, but that would translate because everyone hates things getting twisted up, you know? And so, and their antennas could get, so it's probably something they've heard from other cultures before.
It's probably a whole thing in Andorian culture where if your antennas are like too long or something, they get, you know,
get made fun of.
Tangled up in each other.
Those antennas were all freaking me out. They're all like,
oh yeah,
they had special puppeteers.
Yeah, man, they're all moving and being like,
yeah, it's pretty awesome. Like at the end when Shran says to Archer, he's like,
I owe you one.
Yeah, he's like, I'm in your debt. His antenna got all meek. If you look, they go inward and down like a dog's tail or something.
And and when he was being aggressive, they went backwards, which is cat style.
Yes,
as opposed to dog style.
That's
dogs get all like forward. Cats do that like ear back thing. That means they're about to fuck you up. So Andorians are cats.
Whoa.
They really like to punch, man. They were punching.
Dude, yeah,
Archer.
They were beating the shit out of Archer.
They were beating the shit out of Archer.
Yeah, they were. Yeah, and like, and then hitting him with a gun and like in the liver.
That was what
shit.
Was.
It was like, it was
Archer
really
gets the shit kicked out of him
violent,
a lot. And it's funny because.
He got beat up.
Most of the time that Archer gets the shit kicked out of him, it's part of his strategy. Like part of his plan is like, all right, here's
that motherfucker
step one of the plan.
Take a punch.
I'm gonna get the shit kicked out of me, and then I'm gonna fucking jabber on about some fucking nonsense.
Like I can't stand the smell.
Archer invented the whole Rachel Ray thing.
Right.
Not Rachel Ray. Rachel Maddow.
He invented Rachel's.
He invented the Rachel Maddow thing, which is where he starts talking, and everyone's like, "What the fuck is he talking about?"
Right.
And then when he gets to the end of his thing, everyone's like, "Oh, okay,
now
Jesus,
you know
okay,
the rest
okay,
of the
we
story.
Get
He's
it.
Putting it all together.
It all ties together, and that's a funny joke.
I
laughed at the joke.
That was what was really getting to me. It was not the face punches. It was all the like the rib punches
to the liver, man.
Yeah,
he was getting it in the liver and the kidneys.
They were kicking.
Yeah. They were kicking the shit out of him.
So when he did that, thing where he walked into that room the second time and started going crazy, like he knew he was going to get his shit kicked out of him, and that was
step one of the plan.
Yeah, that was the whole point of the plan.
And he drops the little statue.
And at first, it seems to make sense. You know, it's like he's 70% of organisms are either bacteria. Some guy rolled him.
Yeah, that was hilarious.
A big bold
that was hilarious.
Yeah.
When he said that, they all looked at him like, "What the fuck are you talking about, man?"
It was said, the guy who rolled the 6 meter diameter thing of string.
It's
and
like
then,
their
oh yeah, the
20%.
French weird dude. Yeah.
And then he was talking about. Then he threw that shit through the wall.
Right. The statue.
He threw the shit through the statue. Then
I always thought it was Tycho Brahe.
I think it is. I think you said it wrong.
I looked on the internet and it's one place
internet.
That I looked at one place and it said it's Tycho Brahe.
I always thought it was Tycho Brahe.
I did it first too.
With his fake nose. Didn't he?
Tyson Brohim.
He lost his nose in a duel over a math equation.
Yeah.
And then
didn't he plop his bladder because he didn't want to leave
his bladder?
He popped his. Wasn't he the one who popped his bladder because he didn't want to leave the table?
Captain Archer?
No. We don't know how he died.
Tycho Brahe.
I think, now listeners, you write in to feedback@itsgotstartrek.com, and we'll have a listener letter coming up soon, but you write into feedback and you let us know the truth about Tycho Brahe. And it might even be that it is associated with Tycho Brahe, but that it is an apocryphal story. But the story goes that he was sitting at a table, and I think he was either in a contest with, he didn't want to get up, he didn't want to be, you know, he wanted to keep eating food, whatever it was, he stayed at the table and kept drinking and eating until his bladder just burst.
Oh man, that's brutal.
The deal with that guy was he just had like the stuff that Kepler used, right?
I think so.
He just had like all the equipment and stuff. And
I think, and he figured
he had done some stuff, and then Kepler just kind of went with that and did more stuff.
Something like that,
anyway, that's a different podcast.
Yeah. So,
it's got... It's got the history of astronomy.
So this all stuff made sense as part of his whole deal, what he's doing, right? He's just sort of like jabbering
on. Step one, get the shit kicked out of him. Man. Step two, talk a bunch of shit. But, step three, profit.
Okay, yeah, but when he profited, he was profiting after he threw the shit and they were taking him out the door.
Yeah.
He kept it up. He started going crazy. He began with idle chit-chat, but then when he was carrying out, he's like, I can't stand another minute with the Vulcans.
It's
like kind of an odd touch to add to your ruse. Yeah. It's like you already accomplished what you're doing with normal, like, idle chit-chat, but why are you acting like a crazy person saying, I don't want to hang out with the Vulcans anymore. Oh,
he's
no.
He's really getting into it. He's just having fun with it.
Why did he add that part? There was no...
Maybe he figured the Andorians would be like, oh, okay. He might have this guy he doesn't like them either.
He just doesn't hate. Yeah. Well, I will say that I thought he did a great job sort of semi-manipulating Shran when he was talking to Shran and saying all this stuff about, like, no, I don't take orders from the Vulcan High Command. They're fucking obnoxious.
Oh, right. Yeah.
It's just like this whole deal that we, in order to get this information, like, you know, he was explaining why he was dealing with T'Pol and stuff. And he didn't lie to Shran at any point. He maybe colored it a little bit more, but I mean, he was frustrated. All the things he said, he was frustrated with the Vulcans. He was frustrated initially with dealing with T'Pol, even though she was growing on him. And ultimately, this is the episode I think she joins the crew effectively this episode to Paul at the end, because she like is supportive of Archer's, like, you know, give him this information about this secret fucking shit that your people have hidden down here, because that's fucked up.
But not before that he questioned her loyalty again, actually, because he says when he goes, when Shran's like saying you're going to attack our vessel, Archer starts talking about the Vulcan treaties, like, your people ought to know about it. He looks at T'Pol and he goes, you have a problem with that?
Yeah,
was kind of like questioning her loyalty, 100%. Right? Like, giving her shit.
Yeah,
and so the first time she was like, fuck you. And this time she looked like she was going to cry, basically, in the episode. She was heartbroken. I would say she was heartbroken when she saw that.
It was kind of messed up.
Those guys, those Vulcans in the background in that facility didn't seem to mind too much that there was some, like, Andorian Vulcans and some pink skins or whatever coming out, just looking. Yeah. They're just going about their business. Like,
it is illogical to care about the interlopers.
Right, yeah.
the game's up.
Yeah.
Let's just continue about our business.
Yeah.
But so. this is the episode, not only that T'Pol sort of begins her separation from the Vulcans and her joining the Enterprise crew in the fullest sense of the term, where you start to think, okay, she planned on this being temporary, and it's maybe not going to be so temporary. It's also where we already talked about, you know, the Vulcans are lying and shit about this thing. The way the episode is laid out is great, because it starts out with you go to the Vulcan thing, they're acting all normal Vulcan, and then they discover the Andorians, and they're being pieces of shit. They're clearly all violent. So you think you've got the setup, but then you start getting the hints that the Vulcans are lying about shit because there's these little lies that start. The transmitter is one of them. Oh, we've got nothing there. Oh, now that we thought we had it, now we have it. Right?
Yeah.
Oh, why do old sensor? Here.
This is the rumor.
Sensor.
Yeah,
The Eldor said sensor.
Beware the Vulcan Eldors.
Lasers.
Elnor.
Can you get the wizard's key?
Yeah, so, and I thought, back to what you were saying about the High Command, so I thought they did a good job of making it sort of seem like kind of a gray area, like, basically, depending on what side you're from, you could see it from the Andorians' perspective, because the Andorians think the humans take order from the High Command, and that makes sense, because the High Command appointed T'Pol to the Enterprise. Mm-hmm. Why would they do that unless they're taking orders from? Well, if you're from a certain perspective that doesn't know the other side of it, or has a certain mindset, that totally wouldn't be sketchy. And he's like, you have a Vulcan, you know, you're in cahoots with the Vulcan, you have this here,
Vulcan, and he's like an armed ship?
Yeah, an armed ship, yeah.
He's like, yeah, we're humans, we're pieces of shit, of course we're armed.
Yeah, and Archer's just like, and Archer had a good answer, he's like, I have a Vulcan science officer, I'm not, like, you know, in cahoots with the Vulcans, you know. And it makes sense, both sides make sense, though. So I thought that was kind of a nice, almost, I'd call it subtle, you know. Yeah, and like you were talking about over the course of the episode, it progressing from, these asshole Andorians to like the fucking, like, oh shit.
And it's setting up the eventual goal. I mean, even though this is the first season, they didn't know how long it was. They certainly probably weren't expecting they would be canceled after four seasons. They didn't know which direction the story was going to go. They didn't know that September 11th was about to happen in the real world, which ended up affecting the direction of their storytelling. Mm. But what they did know was that fundamentally the plot of this show was going to, in some way or another, center around the idea of the formation of the Federation. Right. And so bringing together those original four groups, four species. And so they're really doing an excellent job of laying out the geopolitics of the Vulcans and the Andorians and the humans. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they don't go enough into the Tellarites and stuff that comes. Right. But still, that, like you said, Dan, it's, you can see how in the future these people could get along together if they could just get over this like initial like fucking bullshit they have with each other that seems to be based on some nonsense.
Yeah, it's almost, it's tragic that the Andorians and the humans like end up, you know, by TOS, they're like the enemies, basically.
No, they're all friendly.
They're friendly by TOS.
Are they friendly by TOS? Yeah,
there is an asshole Andorian on an episode of TOS, but like they're still part of the Federation.
It could be that the humans bring everybody together.
I was always under the impression that the Andorians were kind of seen as like these assholes.
Well, they're kind of shitty.
Yeah.
I think because
Vulcans
they are assholes.
Kind of shitty too.
Yeah.
I mean, look into the future. It's our
humans.
Yeah, the Andorians
are all weird.
Yeah, they're still kind of.
Yeah, they're still kind of shitty in the future.
I think the other thing is Andorians disappeared after the animated series, right? In TNG, Deep Space Nine, that's Voyager, true. There's a couple background, like an Andorian sitting at a table in TNG, that sort of thing, but they're not a part of the story. We don't learn more of their culture. They're not involved in any of the major plots
it's
with
all
the Borg or anything.
Klingons.
Yeah, and I believe part of that, I don't know, I think some of it was that with TNG when they started, you know, they were going to keep a few things around, but they really wanted to differentiate themselves. And so, you know, they're bringing in the Ferengi and then the Cardassians and the Bajorans, you know, all these newer people, which then the Deep Space Nine and Voyager then went with those kind of, they continued on those plot lines and expanded on those plot lines. So we didn't get Andorians again until Discovery.
Right.
Which was really cool because we got to see one particular Andorian, like up close and personal for a long time. What was his name? Ren?
Something like that.
And Ren, yeah. And
he didn't have any antenna.
Yeah, they cut him off.
Yeah, I know. And that comes from Enterprise too, because there's a character who like that's a punishment, or elite, where they mention it. You know, it's something that happens to one of the characters that they get an antenna cut off.
Damn.
But yeah, I mean, it's cool. The plot is fun. I think it's, you know, twisty and turny and surprisy, and
it's a fun episode. Like
it's lore. You get some really good lore.
Using transporters for the first time.
Yeah, right. They're all nervous.
Yeah,
they're all like, just do it anyway.
Jeffrey Combs is awesome.
Yeah,
and this character character.
Right, he's great in everything he does in like Star Trek.
He plays.
And if you haven't seen the movie From Beyond, sorry, I had to get that in there. From Beyond, it's fucked up with him.
He's in a ton of great movies, like Reanimator, of course. He's in The Frighteners.
Yeah,
he's in a million different things. But of course, in Star Trek, for those who may not be aware, his most famous roles probably in Star Trek, in addition to Shran, are on Deep Space Nine. He plays the various incarnations of Weyoun, the Weyoun Vorta clones. And brilliant, one of the better characters in all of Star Trek history. And he also plays the Ferengi, I can't remember the name of that, I have it somewhere here.
He plays a Ferengi?
Oh yeah, he's a member of the Ferengi Commerce Authority, and he's a liquidator. That's Liquidator Brunt.
Whoa. Wait, he's the guy that like roams through and just fucks shit up. And
he's always like closing down Quark's bar.
Yeah, and Quark's like, oh, and he's always coming by like smirking at Quark, and being like, Quark.
And he walks in, he's like, Brunt, FCA.
Yeah.
That's his whole deal.
Oh.
Yeah, and then when there's a brief period where Quark becomes like the Grand Nagus, or they think he's going to become the Grand Nagus, and Brunt is like becomes all obsequious to him.
Oh, okay, yeah, right, that guy.
Yeah. So, but he's also played a few other characters as well. Jeffrey Combs. And the Vulcan Elder was played by a fellow named Bruce French.
Oh right.
And okay. he was in Star Trek. Yeah, he is one of those guys you see because he's got like over 100 credits or something. He's been a guest star on almost every TV show. It seems like since the 80s.
He was on Passions.
He was on
soap opera about witches.
Yeah.
He was on TNG. he had a role on TNG.
Airplane two of the sequel.
Yeah. He was in Airplane 2 with William Shatner, Star Trek Insurrection, and Voyager. He had roles on. So this is
Roy Combs.
This was his maybe last foray into Star Trek, but
Mission Impossible 3.
Not his first. But he's got a good face. I think totally. Enterprise did a good job with they had a fair amount of good Vulcan casting. Not all of it. Mm-hmm. Not all of it, but they had to cast a bunch of Vulcans, and so you got to meet a bunch of different characters.
Yeah, no, that was cool. Like, it was funny when I was first watching. I was like, "Oh, that kind of like looks like younger Spock from like Star Trek 3." But then I was like, "Well, that doesn't make sense because that actor is old now."
But yeah, it kind of looked like him.
Just
well, you know, that reminded me
off the cuff, and I was like,
"The haircut." Eh.
Because some of them had the
Spock TOS haircut, but some Vulcans, they do that on Enterprise where the Vulcans have a sort of a bigger variety of haircuts, which is cool, and a few different hairstyles. Like that elder Vulcan, he was like, it was pretty good haircut for an old Vulcan.
This episode was directed by a cast member of Voyager.
Roxanne Dawson. Yeah. She played B'Elanna.
Hmm.
Odds and ends.
Yeah, I know. I do think we've drifted into our odds and ends. So
do we have any letters from people?
Internet.
We do, but let's finish up odds and ends, and then we'll read the letters. We've covered most of the things. It was the one odd and end is this was like maybe one of the shortest opening teasers ever.
Yeah, it was just like it was just okay, monks worshiping, some Andorians come in looking menacing.
Yeah, they all bust in. They look all sassy and they're standing there like with their sassy Andorian boots.
Uh-huh. Sassy Andorian boots.
The puncher.
People hadn't seen Andorians in a long time. Right? So, like we said, it was TAS until this moment. There were no Andorians. So maybe they were just banking on like, oh, everyone watching the TV is going to be like, fuck, it's the Andorians, man.
Shit,
this episode is going to go what?
Blue dudes.
Because that's what people said back then.
They should have had Cation like that.
Is it the blue dude?
I hope they have a Cation in season 4 of Discovery.
Yeah, I hope so.
I heard a rumor that they were planning on having it in season 3, but that the special effects... it became problematic, but that maybe they think they might be able to do it in season 4.
Seems like it's, you know,
we need some live action Cations, and we need some, I always forget the name of the three-armed ET alien.
Oh yeah, right.
Who predates ET.
Yeah, they had one on Lower Decks.
Yeah, Lower Decks had one.
Yeah.
But they should do a live action because I can't imagine they would look anything other than horrific. Like a horrific demon creature is sitting at the con. And totally. you're like, all right, take us to that planet. Take us to Ryza. It's like, I have three arms.
That was like James Doohan.
It was always James Doohan.
He did all the voices.
So the first clue, I would think, that when they showed up to that place that there was something wrong was when they rang the doorbell and, like, nobody answered. And they go in and dude is standing.
They rang the doorbell?
The statues are all askew.
And that dude was, the elder was standing right in that room. Yeah. He just didn't answer the door.
I thought you were going to say it was when they rang the doorbell and it was all like, ding, 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 ding.
That's what I was I was like, what doorbell? What are you talking about? Yeah, well, I was like, oh, the actual bell.
And then they pull the rope and it goes like,
yeah, meh, right.
Meh.
Yeah. And if you look, and actually the sets in this episode, I like the sets. Mm-hmm. I thought there was a lot of cool things going.
Production design is great.
Designer said this was one of the hardest episodes of the first season.
Oh, really?
They had to build that whole set.
They had to build that fucking freaky statue face.
Yeah, there was attention to detail. Because remember when T'Pol was noticing shit was off, even though nobody answered the doorbell when
somebody's
they were sitting
knocked
right there?
Over something's... that pot.
She was like...
That statue's askew.
Yeah, she was saying it was at an odd angle. And if you... And then, you know, Tucker's a dick. He's like, oddly perched, huh? We better call Starfleet Command. It's like, fuck
Charles,
you, Tucker.
Charles Chip Tucker III.
It's like, we better call Starfleet Command. You know it means. It's just, it all adds up into something's fucked up here, fucking Tucker. But,
fucking Tucker.
But if you watch the scene where they go in and they...
Fucking Florida.
Tallahassee.
And, Tucker. And they pan across. I'm just trying to say, this is another case of me trying to say one sentence.
Dan Panzer.
Looking forward to it.
Okay, so fuck you, man.
I'm sincere. It's 100% sincere.
I was just going to say, it was attention to detail, because when they go in that room and it pans across the room, if you look to the right, I believe, you can see that that statue is oddly perched. It's good. That's one of those things people catch, it's not oddly perched in that scene. And they go, yeah, this movie,
fuck that. Can you do Trip Tucker saying oddly perched again? Because I really like that.
It was...
Every time you do Trip Tucker, it's good.
Yeah.
Oddly perched, huh? You better call Starfleet Command.
I love it. And we love Trip Tucker.
Oddly perched.
Oddly perched.
Tripped. Yeah. So that was that.
Her
Trip Tucker Sprinkles.
T'Pol's observations reminded me, even though it's really not a direct analogy, but it kept making me think of the Sean Connery character in Rising Sun, and not even the movie. I in the book.
Jeez, that's a fucking reference.
Yeah, right.
Well, people know Michael Crichton, right? Rising Sun. It's a good book.
The book is excellent. The movie is.
I read the book too, but it was. So mediocre. Long ago that anybody read that book, you like nobody's all gonna right. remember it.
Here you go. Here's an It's Got Star Trek recommendation. Go read Rising Sun.
Yeah, it's a good book.
Eaters of the Dead is good too.
Yeah, I mean Michael Crichton in general is good, but Rising Sun is good. It's a bit of a departure for him.
Yeah, because it's like modern day
and a detective story. Yeah,
right,
but
detective story has got good old gang violence.
But Sean Connery, I'm very lucky because I can't remember the character's name, but he's played by Sean Connery in the movie, and he has a similar thing that T'Pol has, is that they're in a room. And to the detective, everything's fine. He's like, everything looks fine. And Sean Connery's like, no, there's like these subtle reasons how I can tell somebody was here.
Right.
And
everything's kind of shifted differently. Yeah.
It's too perfect, basically. And it's, or whatever. It's like I said, it's not a perfect analogy, but it was sort of a similar vibe of just being hyper observant and noticing things that were out of
Sherlock.
Place.
Right.
Yeah. Like Sherlock, except without all the. Well, I was about to say without all the cocaine, but I guess it's T'Pol taking her
she's
nasal.
She's taking that cocaine.
Her nasal defibrillator. What was it called?
It was called a
nasal
numbing agent.
Yes,
numbing agent.
It's a nasal numbing agent.
So those Andorians, those Andorians. Hey, what? How about those Andorians? You hear about them?
How Andorian was it?
Their lasers. They didn't seem that strong. Didn't it zap some dude in the shoulder?
Yeah. And it shot him. Zap. And he was like,
yeah.
And he all fell. And he was like, oh, I'm okay. You guys go.
Yeah, like, I would think a bullet would have done more damage to that guy.
Totally.
And then did you see it was like, it was selectively destroying relics. It would burn shit.
Yeah, that was
and
great.
And it would blow up small vases, but big metal vases. Like
sparking. It was like,
yeah, and there was no mark left behind on that. There was no mark left on the steel door that
they
shot.
They all had pretty low settings.
It didn't even leave a mark on this little horse thingy that they shot either. And you'd think the Andorians, I can understand that from Starfleet, but you'd think the Andorians would set their shit to like kill and
right.
Maybe
and
they're
melt
not that,
and,
they're not that
and
advanced.
Fucking eradicate or some shit.
Well, and they, yeah, because they don't have transporters.
Well, then use a bullet. Use a fucking bullet. That would have done more damage.
Maybe they just figured, we have these lasers.
Mm. Yeah, lasers are the way of the future. Way of the future. It's the way of the future.
Future. Way of
down
future.
in the reliquary where they were fighting in the reliquary.
He's nuts.
So when they were looking around, right? You know, when they were, what were they looking for?
Who?
The Andorians.
They were looking for the spy station.
Yeah, but they were escaping.
They were convinced there was
long
a spy station.
Sensor.
Yeah, down in the sensor room.
Like, what was there was what they thought was there. Yep. And they just couldn't figure out how to find it.
But they were talking about check the quarters, like... I would assume
for like secret passages or equipment that would indicate
I came from this sort of, you know, now perspective of here, how we live now. And I'm thinking quarters are on the second floor. So there's not going to be any secret doors down to the transporter station.
Not everyone's
on the second
quarters are on the second floor.
I realize that now, but that's what I was assuming before.
And that's people. That's why we have to self-examine. And that's why it's good to have good friendships with people. We can identify areas of our own blindness.
Speaking of the catacombs, their way of opening that secret passage was fucking weak. It was just like some... they just twisted a a Rocky Vase sting.
And that could happen by accident if you're playing indoor softball, for example.
Right. Indoor softball on your...
And you know, you go to catch the softball and you bump into it and you twist it by accident because, you know, you're in a catching motion.
That's what they need to do is play sports to get rid of their emotions instead of, like, throw shit.
It was like that Vulcan, that Vulcan ship that has that ongoing business with Cisco. There's that Vulcan who has that bet with Cisco that his team could beat the DS9 team.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That was an interesting episode.
It's a really silly episode. Yeah, but it's cute.
Yeah.
They should have at least had like a rotating bookcase or something.
Yeah, exactly. Where you
put the Kendall
where you like touch like, you know, you go under the hood of your car when you pop it and you find that
you
button.
You find that funny little...
It should be on the side there and somebody else should press the other side because anyone could have tried to pick that up or something, but you know.
I know. It's like, hey, this looks cool.
Or maybe like a pin number. Shit.
But you can forget pin numbers.
Just a pin.
No, you remember that.
Oh, pin number. You made me say it.
I did. Don't blame Dan for that. That's all on me.
ATM machine.
I've had an IPA, and I said pin number, even though I'm horrified. I'm horrified by the concept. Just a pin.
It's a pin.
A pin.
That's all you need.
It's as if they were at the ATM.
The ATM
machine.
You had an IPA ale.
See, now you're just being mean.
I'm just being a stinker.
So they make a reference to communal culinar, and I was like, I don't know, that sounds... Colonoscopy. That sounded like it had to be a cover story. Because DePaul is all like, and then, you know, they might be doing communal colonar. And I'm thinking, communal colonar? That's...
Ain't no such thing.
That's a sex thing.
I was like, it sounded like an orgy.
A sex thing.
It sounded like an orgy.
We have no more emotions.
We're purging our emotions.
You know, just getting orgasms.
Why were there no women?
For health.
Why were there no women Vulcans in there? Or they get their own place?
Because they're assholes.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, because Vulcans kind of suck.
You know, T'Pol was talking about the Andorians. She's like, they're known for their suspicious and volatile nature.
Because she's racist.
They resent our superior reasoning and our technology. The only thing that could be...
She's watching a lot of fucking Fox News and OAN. Sorry, folks. I know. We got yelled at before for even saying that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
The only
fuck them.
The only non-specious thing she said was about the technology. But, like, you know, it reminded me, was it Harry Kim said that shit to Quark in the first episode of Voyager, and wasn't that? And Quark was like taking pseudo offense to it. And I think they were talking about how, they warned us about you on Starfleet.
Yes.
And so that kind
of
like...
Another example of Harry Kim, because when we did Timeless a couple weeks ago, you made the point that Harry Kim was racist against Seven of Nine because he kept referring to her as the drone.
The drone.
That's right. That was effed up. I didn't like that at all.
We concluded that perhaps Harry Kim didn't get promoted because he's a virulent racist.
Yeah.
He's a nice guy. You can be a nice guy, but still be a virulent racist. And
killed everybody.
Life is not going to treat you well, okay? Oh, man. Tamp that shit down. Harry Kim, come on. All right, so one thing, you know, the Enterprise was the last series of Star Trek where they still use the matte painting thing, except now they have CGI matte paintings. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because it's CGI, so there's an advancement there, but they're still in that mode, that like kind of flattish matte painting mode. And I watching this episode, which makes a lot of use of that kind of matte painting of the temple, I was thinking about like, now we don't have that anymore because now it's full CGI, 3D and everything. So you lose that kind of... It was a Star Trek trope to have like a painting in the background or a painting of a temple, you know, the Cardassian homeworld.
It was
the
usually
Klingon
that Cardassian city.
Yeah, with the curvy spiky things or the Klingons,
or
Kronos.
A Klingon, yeah.
Yeah, but every one of them, humans included, have some kind of temple in the mountains. Like the Klingons, fucking...
It's like some kind of Jedi temple or
something. Yeah, right. Secluded temple in the mountains. They gotta all have one.
The Klingons have the best ones, I think.
Yeah, the Klingons.
They got the time crystals.
Enterprise. DS9. Yeah, the Klingons.
You can't beat that shit.
But anyway, I just... It was something that popped out of me that I was really enjoying. And I miss it, even though I don't dislike the modern production style, because you can do more. And it really does look great. The modern production style is really, really high end. And I imagine it'll only get more so with all the you know, they're adding that season 4 of Discovery is apparently going to be filmed with one of those special digital walls that they used in The Mandalorian.
Oh, fuck.
Where instead of having a blue screen, the actors and everybody, they actually see what's going on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's all digitally connected to the cameras, so it does the 3D and parallax and all that. It's amazing. And it makes it much cheaper to do much higher end effects. Right. But it, I was looking at this and I was like, oh yeah, you know, that's, it's not that it, I won't say it's missing. It's just that it's different. Right. And for so long from TOS, Star Trek had that, that those big grand matte paintings. And what was hilarious on, especially on TOS and TNG, is sometimes the matte paintings were so amazing compared to like the shitty foreground, like the, you know, it's like styrofoam shit in the foreground, but in the background is this majestic, like factories looming in the sky.
I keep thinking of the episode of TOS when I think it's the one where the dude becomes a god or was becoming a god or whatever.
I'm not jokingly.
Gary Mitchell.
Where no man has gone before.
Yeah, isn't that the one where they go down?
I was going to say there's a few episodes where somebody turns into a god.
Right.
Or he goes looking for God.
But I think there was one where he goes down. They go down to the planet, and the planet has this huge, like the mat. I think this is the one where there's this matte painting of this huge, like outdoor factory with all these pumps and tubes and
tanks and shit,
and it goes on for forever. But it's so hard to place it in connection with what's happening in the foreground. I don't care because it's awesome, but it's like it's you have to really focus to try to like push them together so they fit.
It's the same thing. I think a similarly acute example is in a Wink of an Eye, because they have these matte paintings of this majestic city where it seems empty,
but then
the zoomed in, like when they're walking around the city, it's like some just flat painted just like a wall behind them and some fake fountain and the guy's all looking at the fountain. It's just like a fucking hose sticking up out of water. But like when they zoom out, and it's the original matte painting. It's not like even the digital upgrade or whatever. It's just like this gorgeous gleaming city.
Yeah, there was one where they were just in some cave room, some purple cave room with styrofoam rocks everywhere, and the background was just purple wall. It didn't make any sense. So I was like, are they inside some palace?
Is this the purple planet?
Are they outside? There's purple on the wall and stones on the ground.
That's all there is purple.
Are we inside or are we outside?
I told my old lady I'd be home by 9 o'clock. Purple's fine. That's what we got, that's fine. In this scenario, I was imagining that they had sort of run out of other colors of paint, and in order to change, you know, that they had purple, because who needs purple? Why would you, so it doesn't get used up, so they have extra purple, and if they were going to get another color, they'd have to send somebody to the Paramount or the NBC warehouse to go get, you know, some more paint, and it was just going to delay things, it was going to add overtime to the hours, you know, because of the whole union thing, and then the guy was not going to get home, and he had to get home to his old lady by 9, because he had a date with his side piece, or whatever, what do they call that? They must have had a term for his best gal, or something, I don't know, and she was going to meet him down at the club at 12 o'clock, and they were going to listen to some jazz and play some craps.
It's not Mr. Poiple, it's Mr. Pink.
Pink's Mr. Poiple's on a different job.
You're Mr. Wow.
You're Mr. Dane.
I was like,
you're Mr. Blue.
I was like, I can't tell if this is going to be like a Fantasy Island thing or.
The plane. So I want to go over real quick the five rules to going to. What's it called? Pajem.
Oh,
the temple in Pajem.
Pajem.
I summarized them to Paul's rule. Yeah, she was saying, don't speak to the Vulcan elder unless spoken to first. It's number one.
Mm. Number one.
Number two, don't approach if meditating. Mm. If they're meditating, not if you're meditating.
How do we know if they're meditating?
That's my question. Like all that shit for the English.
What if they're just
like
taking a nap?
Yeah, I don't know.
What if they're just tired and shagged out after a long squawk?
Number three, be quiet.
Shouldn't that be number one?
That should be number one.
Number one and number six.
Number five, don't smell so bad.
Yeah, right. Put on some deodorant, bitch.
Okay.
Potpourri in your pockets.
Number four was don't touch shit.
Don't touch.
And number five, at the end, accept a rock and bow. Now, do they get...
What was that called?
Jakar stone. Now, at first I thought that she...
Jakar Noir.
When she said, like, basically...
Eat a cigar.
They're going to present you with this rock. I thought they were going to keep it, but I guess when she said present, it just meant look at it.
And then
something.
Sort of pet it a little bit.
Yeah, right, because they didn't
get to take it home.
Which breaks rule number four.
I thought you got to take it with you.
They weren't carrying it with them when the scene happened, but they did get attacked by a bunch of Andorians.
I don't know. Was it those things they were using to illustrate their plans when they had those little...
They threw the little statue thing.
No, those were Jakar coins.
Those are Jakar coins.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I don't know what those things were.
Those were worth like 1,000 Jakar stones.
Probably.
Jakar Noir.
I thought they were playing some of that board game where you put the board together as you play it.
Candyland.
No, it's a board game where you put the board pieces are like cardboard hex or maybe they're triangles or something, but you put the board together as you play it.
And Dungeons and Dragons.
But it's not a Dungeons and Dragons type game. That's a good... See,
you're talking about Settlers of Catan?
That would have been like
Settlers
Hero Quest.
Settlers of Catan?
I'm not talking about Settlers of Catan. This is
some other game.
Some other game. I might have gotten the hexagon from Settlers of Catan or something.
Yeah,
but
they do that. Hero.
But this is a different game.
Did you notice when she said don't touch anything, she made a point to be all like looking at Charles Tripp Tucker III?
No, yeah, I didn't, but I believe it.
She's all like, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And she's like, and then don't touch shit. And she's all like looking at him, and he's all like, why are you looking at me?
This ain't Florida, dude.
Yeah, right. You mean there ain't no gators here for me to put my hand in?
3,000-year-old temple. So what was up with... I have my theory, but what was you up with Phlox just fucking nabbing at her celery? Like,
what was he eating that he needed to scoop up the...
It was like beans.
That was a really... It was like beans.
What I like is...
That was a cool scene.
Kind of beans.
It looked like beans to me.
I like when they have good timing of shit that's falling. For example, when he scooped up this...
Yes.
He scooped up... He's filling up this like celery with this dripping gunk and he puts his mitts all over it. He puts it up into his mouth and so a bit of it falls off as he's putting it to his mouth and then more falls out of his mouth. Like, I want to say that was CGI, but it probably wasn't. He totally did that.
He takes a bite of the celery just by itself and then he starts scooping it up. It's like... Who are these people just eating celery? What the fuck?
Well, yeah.
Like, how did they get
fiber?
Humans don't eat that shit.
It's good acting. Good acting.
I'm still wondering how he got it to drip. How he got
good
it
acting.
To
brilliant
drip
acting,
off the celery.
I would say.
It was amazing. Mm-hmm.
John Billingsley is a brilliant actor.
He's really great.
Yeah.
And what's thanks.
And that was a good little.
I'm glad you brought that up.
That was
like,
a great
between,
scene.
Like saying like,
that, and it's an important
look at these
scene.
Humans.
Yeah.
It's an important scene because it's the first moment in the episode where we're primed to call out the Vulcans for their bullshit and hypocrisy.
Right.
Because he is saying, she's sitting there and he's saying like, well, you know, edict. Right, the whole Vulcan edict thing is infinite diversity and infinite combinations.
Right,
is it just some bullshit you people say?
Yeah,
because you're not fucking practicing it.
Right.
And I think that the point of him reaching over and just grabbing the celery and then asking her is kind of to be like, infinite diversity. I'm the diversity that just takes you shit.
Yeah, and then she's
he's testing her on that philosophy.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it begins with her and her plate of celery, cucumber, carrot, okra, radish, and some kind
she
of
had
lettuce.
One of those funny yellow squash things.
Yeah,
but it was all little.
Like, is that a squash? Because I couldn't
kind
figure
of squash,
out what that was.
Yeah, it's like a mini squash.
She literally had a plate of garnish.
It was. And that's how they live.
And
man.
She was eating it with a fork and knife, like
they're
she
vegans.
Did. She did that breadstick, and
they
I
got
think
like
the first
two or three stomachs. I think.
Do they the Vulcans? You're thinking of Klingons.
No, Klingons have two stomachs, possibly two penises, high probability two buttholes.
Two buttholes.
Yeah. So, Phlox. I keep wanting to call him Neelix. Phlox. So no, Phlox. To Paul.
Like a good Neelix.
To Paul is eating her celery with a fork and knife. And Phlox is like being all slovenly and gross and like so you were saying, it's the infinite infinite diversity, infinite combinations make infinite permutations or whatever.
Precisely correct.
Yeah. And
verbatim.
So it's just sort of showing I guess it was just the scene was just meant to show the opposite. And he was made an interesting point about you're not just learning about species that you like go travel to, you're learning about the humans that you're living with as well.
Right.
And yeah, and
they're learning about you.
Yeah, exactly. So you know, that was a pretty interesting. That was a pretty good scene. Yeah.
Odds and ends.
That was.
Look at all those odds and ends.
That was a good scene.
That Phlox scene was better than the Neelix scene.
Oh yes.
In
any Neelix.
he didn't even say which Neelix scene.
I know.
Oh yes. Oh yes.
Any Neelix scene.
The one that we Jesse saw. Has spoken. The one we saw where Harry Kim calls. What's call 7 of 9 a drone because they go through time.
Timeless.
Timeless, yeah. So, yeah, so
the time travel story with no time travel.
So that was Neelix had one scene.
More like The Notebook.
And Neelix did have a good scene about having some rat, some kind of rat to give him for good luck or something, right?
Yes, yeah. The fly. It was the hairy fly. Yeah.
Oh, God. It was a Talaxian
hair fly.
Hair fuzz beetle or something. Yeah.
Fuzz fly, I think. Or buzz, yeah. Fuzz, fur fly. So it was a Talaxian fur fly.
It was awful. It was like a cross between a rat and a bug. It was like if you had a fly that was the size of a rat, but it was hairy. And
it's like if you wanted a fly that you could snuggle with in bed at night. Mm. It, like a substantial bubonic fly. Like plague. A substantial snuggle.
It would totally give you like all kinds of plagues.
The plague.
So, yeah, that was one of Neelix's better scenes, but this Phlox scene was really good, like top notch. I wouldn't call the Neelix
scene. We didn't get a lot of Phlox this episode, but what we did was very good. It was very good Phlox.
Poignant.
All right. So any other final points before we read the letters and then provide our contact information conclude the podcast?
I mean, when I say it was one of Neelix's better scenes, I'm not saying it was half as good as that Phlox scene. I just want...
It's all right.
Was one of Neelix's better scenes.
It was.
Yeah.
Because he got to say... Because he presented the fur fly. Tuvok says...
The fur fly upstaged Neelix.
Because then Tuvok is all like, you're an unending source of astonishment. And then Neelix is all like, well, thank you, Mr. Balkan.
Yeah.
All right. So, any final observations or points that are just you just desperately need to get out?
Archer can take a punch.
Yeah, hell yeah, he can.
He can take a beating and keep going, man.
What's great is
like he gets the shit beat out of him,
and he's
like
really,
all it hurts.
He looks like it hurts.
Yeah,
because a lot of the other captains don't act the pain, and he looks like he's pretty fucked up. He's still smiling because he's like, my plan worked.
But it's like, damn,
there was just something about the way the Andorians were kicking him and punching him that was just extra, like, pop.
Yeah, it was brutal.
Like they were just they were beating really the shit getting in there, man.
I guess I just wanted to mention the other time Trip Tucker was racist.
Well, he is from Florida.
Was it about Vulcans?
Sorry, Floridians.
He was
racist against Andorians. Was he also racist against Vulcans?
No, this was the second one about Andorians. It was like Archer just got beat up and he came back and the monks are all like, hey, we ain't got nothing here. And Archer's like, I don't think they're buying that, buddy. And then,
yeah, that was good, man.
Yeah.
I remember.
Yeah, so, and he said he saw some kind of scanning console. He says, talking about searching the room. They're looking for that door, I guess. And all Tucker does is go like, you'd think they could find whatever it is they're looking for with them antennas of theirs. And then, like, so that's like, you know, like,
just assuming the antennas like, do something.
Yeah, they do something and, like, attract these sort of electric. Yeah, exactly. So... Yeah, that was
if
Tucker's always racist.
I think it's arguably racist if you want to pull back from that a little bit. At the very minimum, it's prejudicial.
Yeah.
Prejudging.
Speechist.
Literally,
yeah.
Prejudging.
Speech.
He is forming assumptions about people he did not know about.
Yeah.
5 minutes before.
Right.
So, but do you think that's
early on in the timeline though?
Do you think that? Yeah. Do you think that's more or less specious than him telling them not to get their antennas in a twist when you know they're.
Well, that could just be playful, like
playful racism.
Playful racism,
which is possible, but it's not like they're friends.
You're getting captured by some aliens, man.
Yeah,
you're talk getting shit. The shit beat out of you.
I'm sympathetic. I'm not calling. Mm-hmm. He's not a piece of shit. It's just it's funny. I mean, you got to remember, this is the words that were written to put. And it's like, isn't it charming that these people they're calling these people pinkskins because all humans are white? And he's making fun of their antennae. Interestingly, they didn't make fun of their blue skin.
Yeah.
Oh.
He could have been like racist against maybe from the writer's perspective. By the way, this was written by Fred Decker, but the story was by Fred Decker, Brandon Braga, and Rick Berman. And I think that's where Rick Berman probably was like, all right, I don't give a fuck about the rest of the episode. Just make sure that T'Pol almost gets raped at some point.
Yeah.
And Brandon Braga was probably doing the whole blanket scene because, I don't know.
Her hair looked a little different than usual. It looked a little bit more like top heavy or something.
Top heavy it's a wig. Maybe the wig didn't go on so well.
It's definitely a wig.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know what? There were no numbers for me to write down in this episode.
No star dates.
No
regular dates.
The techno babble was pretty low. Like whatever nasal blocker, that's really low on the techno babble.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
That's an important point. It's an important thing to point out because I think the scene with Trip Tucker, the third, when he goes
the third.
When he's guided to the transmitter and then he starts looking at it, Trip Tucker, he looks at it, opens it up, cleans off some dust, and says, "All right, it's a
Krellide
power cell.
I never met a radio I
couldn't
fix.
We'll sort this out." If this had been done on Voyager, and Voyager is where Technobabble, and I love Voyager, but Voyager is where Technobabble went crazy because it just built up over fucking 30 years, like, and they were like, "All right,
this is going to be it. We're just going to see how far we can push
this." If Paris or Kim had been the one fixing that, they would have pulled it out, and they would have then spent 5 minutes explaining exactly what was wrong with it and what their plan was to fix it, and none of it would make any sense. It's like, "Oh, what we have to do is the translator has to be done there, and what we have to do is, you know, blah, blah." Trip Tucker's just like, "It's covered in dust. I'll fucking clean this shit. I'll figure this shit out." They rely on the audience to be like, "Okay, the audience can figure out it needs a new battery or some similar thing." It doesn't matter, because it doesn't fucking matter. Right. To the plot, all that matters is that Trip Tucker is going to fix this, and he's an engineer, so we don't need to know anything beyond that to know that the thing will get fixed, and they'll contact Reed, and then Reed will be all like, "Tight, I get to fuck some shit up.
We don't need no techno babble. Let the battery be fixed as
we
a plot
don't
point.
Need no
techno oh, I thought that was going to be like a chant, like a rhyming,
we
like some sort of a spoken word thing.
Techno babble."
Was it a haiku?
Was it a haiku?
I thought he was doing a Pink Floyd.
Yeah,
but he was really doing that other thing. You were doing. We don't need no water.
Yeah, we don't need no water. Let the motherfucker. What threw it off is the technical.
Life is a game that no one wins, but you deserve a way out the way your lives go in. So throw in the towel because your life ain't shit.
I think that
now take that towel and hang yourself with it.
Throw in the towel. Yeah,
like short and hard, like a bodybuilding elf. So save the planet and kill yourself.
Bloodhound gang. Yes. Yes.
When you're feeling down and out with what your life is all about, lift your head up high and blow your brains out.
So this Bloodhound Gang, but like, I feel like...
That is Bloodhound Gang, yes.
But I'm saying that saying that we don't need no water, let the motherfucker burn, that's from before, and I don't know where
it originated. Of course, that clearly predates the Bloodhound Gang.
Some old 70s
Yeah,
stuff.
It's from like this.
That's some black
people 60s,
stuff.
Yeah. Early 70s. Like,
yeah.
Like good,
but I don't know what exactly it originates
black
from.
Black power stuff,
yeah,
is what it comes from.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Shows what I know.
It's something we should all take to heart. Seriously, burn this motherfucking shit.
Yeah,
down.
That's what they were talking
it
about.
It needs to burn.
It was in a Rancid song as well. Tim's like, "We don't need no water, let the motherfucker burn."
Oh yeah, dude.
"We don't need no water, let the motherfucker burn."
That was Let's Go.
Sounds like a cat spitting up a hairball.
That's how that guy sang.
He didn't sound like that in Operation Ivy.
All right.
No.
So
he wasn't diverging.
We have concluded our discussion of the Andorian incident. We don't know what we're talking about next week, but we'll let you know on social media.
It doesn't matter.
We'll tell you about social media in a second.
The theme song.
The theme song's good. I know. The faith of the heart. It's
not good.
Yeah, and we've discussed this before. It's not good. It's because you haven't lived with it long.
Skip
enough.
It.
No, what happens is
skip intro.
Oh, man.
You hear it for a while and then you hate it, and then it's like to be fair, it might be like an abusive relationship kind of thing where over time you're like, you know what, I need to have them.
Yeah, I can understand why they did it,
especially in the third season when they started jazzing it up a little bit. All right, so we have a totally real listener letter this week. And this week it says, "Dear Mr. It's Got Star Trek, are you interested in growing your Instagram, Facebook, TikTok accounts?
Oh,
100%
no.
Guaranteed.
That's not a real letter.
1K followers, $10. 2K followers,
you just want some money.
$20. And that goes up to, there's a list.
I think this is more real than Mr. Argentina. Or 20, what was that?
Was that guy like, "Where do you get off?"
20K followers.
I like that guy. Where do
for
you
$150.
Get off?
It says, "Text me in my official account. It is necessary to answer quickly, for else deal is to others.
I am the Prince of Nabu.
Sincerely, at Social Media Exarts.
Exarts.
1144LL_3 4XLY.
Oh, man.
So thank you we're glad you like the show, and we'll be in touch to purchase followers.
who is that guy, like Dr. Aldor Argencia or something, who was asking
who
us about closed threads a couple weeks ago? He was like, what closed...
I can't remember.
Yeah.
There was something, Hammerschmidt or something.
Something, but this letter.
There was
letter,
like Mr. Worcester.
But this letter you read just.
Johnny Worcestershire.
This yeah. letter you read just now Johnny is.
This is from an at social media xarts x 144LLV_34XLY.
Yeah, I'm saying that this email right here is more real than Dr. Aldor or whatever they're from Argentina totally 2 months ago.
All totally real.
it's real in the
letters. Maybe he's living in La Boca.
If you want to send in a totally real listener letter, you can reach us at, what's that Recoleta. Address? Do you know, anyway, who knows the address? Do you know it, Dan?
123 Town Street.
That's an address.
Any town, USA.
It's feedback at itsgotstartrek.com.
Awesome. Yes, feedback at itsgotstartrek.com.
So what did that person want? That one person wanted us to join his, he would give us likes. He would
Are
give
you
us
interested in growing your Instagram, Facebook, TikTok accounts? So 100% guaranteed.
So they're just going to give us like a bunch of followers with underscores everywhere in their name. Yeah. It's like nonsense.
That's how you get ahead in this world, baby. You get a bunch of underscores and doodads and Russian bots. And
Russian bots.
That's how you gain power in this country.
You ain't going to make a dime if you ain't got a squeegee.
So if you want to send us an email, send us to feedback at itsgotstartrek.com. We're all over the social medias, like Instagram and Twitter.
Oh, hell yeah.
At It's Got Star Trek. You can also find us on Facebook and on YouTube.
Oh, hell yeah.
And check out those places, because check out the Twitter or the website.
Reddit too.
We'll show
Don't
you.
Be a pussy.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We got / It's Got Everything for all the It's Got Everything podcasts are listed under that subreddit. But anyway, you can. Check out what we're going to talk about next week on our social media, because we'll figure it out between
now and then. As
soon
as we figure it out.
And then we'll get together. We'll bash our heads together and talk about it.
Isn't
but,
there a follow-up episode to like this
there
episode?
Is. There
That's
is.
That's what you should like do
well,
next
we'll consider
week
that.
I'm just throwing that out we'll there. I won't that. Be around.
To Maybe. Paul's called
you
Shadows
could, you
of
could
Pajam.
Always call in.
Shadows of Pajam.
I did have that rocking microphone.
To Paul was ashamed of her crew, man. That sucks. But yeah. she's stronger
they
now.
They smell funny, man.
She
man,
likes.
They
she
smell.
She was afraid to introduce them to her. You know, her people.
Yeah.
But she's a
she
little
was
bit
ashamed.
Now she's ashamed of her people,
yeah,
and so she
well.
Feels the shame mm-hmm. that she feels for her fellow Vulcans has been transferred to keep the balance. Has been yeah. transferred to faith and trust. More faith and trust right. in her
you gotta
in her crew.
All that
to keep the balance. Because the balance. Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
This is an extremely astute observation.
Thanks.
Right at the fucking end of the show. Yeah, right. Well, yeah. With that, we wish you all a lovely rest of the week, and you'll hear from us around the same time on a Star Trek-related topic next week. Until then...
Star Trek.
Star Trek.
Star Trek.
Star Trek.
Have a good one.
Something wrong?
Probably nothing.
But?
This is the main atrium. There should be more than one member of the Order present. And the icon in that shrine is perched at an odd angle.
Oddly perched, huh? We better call Starfleet Command.